Eagle Shows presents the Oaks Gun Show on February 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center. Come out to buy, sell, and trade guns, outdoor sports equipment, arts, and crafts. 1,500 tables on site. Eagle Shows are Pennsylvania's largest gun show, and they have big expectations to meet everywhere they go. Eagle Shows are proud to be guided by our state's motto of virtue, liberty, and independence. Eagle Shows at the Greater Philadelphia Expo Center, February 7th, 8th, and 9th. Visit eagleshows.com and get your tickets today.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Justin, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a game recap edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I am Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast, coming to you live from the Hyundai Texans radio studio following tonight's post-game. Sorry, I got the postseason on my brain because Texans just clinched an AFC South championship, baby! Post-game show. I'm in the Hyundai Texans radio studio following tonight's post-game show after the Texans' 20-12 win over the Miami Dolphins. The Texans get a big win today on the back of the defense and some special teams play. Not much out of the offense other than some opportunistic points following plays by the Texans defense and special teams. Good enough to get a very complimentary victory type win over a Miami Dolphins team that had been playing pretty well coming into NRG Stadium. They'd scored over 32 points in three of their last four games. The only game they didn't was a cold weather game on Thanksgiving in Green Bay. So we kind of just ignore those games when it comes to the Dolphins because they don't like it when it's chewy outside. So the Texans get a win, and that combined with the Indianapolis Colts losing in Denver 31-13 in a game that Indy was leading 10-0 in the first half of this game. They were up 13-7, and then Jonathan Taylor made one of those boneheaded moves where kind of like Malachi Corley did for the Jets against the Texans back on that Thursday night game, dropped the football before he walked across the goal line. He was in the clear, drops the football, rolls out of the end zone. It's a touchback, and that's 7 points off the board and just horrific. We'll get to all that in winners and losers in just a second for today. But bottom line is I don't care. Jonathan Taylor, he can fuck up all he wants to. Their loss is the Texans' gain. The Colts' loss is the Texans' gain. And the Texans are AFC South champions for the second year in a row, the eighth time since 2011, and they will host a playoff game, at least one playoff game at NRG Stadium. This Sunday actually broke fairly decently for the Texans, in so much as they got their win over the Broncos. They got their win over the Dolphins. The Texans did. Texans beat the Dolphins. Colts lose to the Broncos, so the division is clinched. The Eagles beat the Steelers, so now the Texans are just a game out of the three seed in the AFC now, so there's that to consider. And the Bills, unfortunately, at the two seed, they beat the Lions in Detroit, so the Lions didn't do us any favors today. The Bills are all alone, the two seed right now. The Texans still do have a win over the Bills head-to-head this year. The problem is the Texans' schedule is brutal over the last three games, and the Bills' schedule is very, very easy. There's a Patriots game in there, a couple other layup games in there for the Bills. And meanwhile, the Chiefs win again today, but the big news out of that game, and this could benefit the Texans, is that Patrick Mahomes left the game with what appears to be a high ankle sprain, and they're listing him as week to week. So it'll be very interesting to see how the Chiefs play this thing on Saturday when they play the Texans. A short week, a quarterback who's gimpy, and not a number one overall seed clinching record in the AFC, but they do have a lead right now over the Bills. Now, the Bills have the head-to-head over the Chiefs. The Bills have the sole loss on the Chiefs' record this season is a loss to the Bills. So if those two end up tied, then the Bills are going to clinch the number one overall seed due to that head-to-head win. But I say all that to say that, look, Patrick Mahomes getting banged up. You play the Chiefs in a few days. The Steelers losing. You winning, Houston Texans. And then the Colts losing, clinching the division for you. Overall, this was a really, really good Sunday for the Houston Texans. And we'll get into winners and losers in a second. But I have to thank DeMeco Ryans for this and congratulate him for this. That he's gotten this thing turned around so quickly. Look, I know about the frustrations on the offensive side of the football. I'm about to talk about them here in a minute or so. But you guys remember what this whole operation looked like in 2021 and 2022, right? If someone had told you in the middle of the Lovie Smith season that this team was winning back-to-back division titles, that the second one they would clinch on December the 15th with still three games to go in the season, right? I mean, so let me just lay it out that way, that DeMeco Ryans overall has done an incredible job. I think there's going to be, if the offense keeps looking the way it's looked, and it looks like they've figured out nothing during the bye week, I'll get into that in a moment, he'll have some hard decisions to make on his coaching staff. But heavy is the head that wears the crown. That's why you get paid big bucks to be an NFL head coach, is you get paid to make hard decisions, like keeping your friends around to coordinate the offense, or trying to figure out if your hire for the offensive line ever made sense in the first place in Chris Strouser. So that's a conversation for another day. For now, congratulations and kudos to DeMeco Ryans, who I think has done an incredible job changing the culture and coaching this football team. Today is a day to congratulate him, especially considering how the Texans won that football game against the Miami Dolphins today. So why don't we start in on four winners, four losers for the game today, and we'll start off with the winners. Kalen Bullock is number four on the winners list. Kalen Bullock had what I would say was one of the two biggest plays of the game, where the Texans had just turned the ball over in Miami territory, up 10-6. They were driving to go get, I would say, at least a field goal, if not a touchdown, and get the ball to start the second half. That middle eight that people love to talk about nowadays, that's a term I'd not heard till like the last month or two, and now people can't shut up about it. The last 4 minutes of the first half, the first 4 minutes of the second half, when you're receiving the ball to start the second half, that is a period of time in a game where you can really create separation in a game. And the Texans were well on their way to doing that, except they turned the ball over. There was a miscommunication with Jared Patterson and C.J. Stroud that resulted in a fumble. The Dolphins get the ball back, and Kalen Bullock gets an interception and returns it down inside the 5-yard line of the Dolphins. So it looked like he had a real shot at a pick six. Didn't turn into a pick six. Texans could not turn it into a touchdown as they only had 13 seconds left in the half, so they didn't even get three plays off. But they kick a field goal. They take a 13-6 lead. That's at a minimum, a 6-point swing right there. Kalen Bullock has been excellent for this football team. That they have found a playmaking, ball hawking starter that is everything and then some that he was advertised to be coming out of USC in the third round of the draft. Kudos to Nick Caserio and DeMeco Ryans for identifying Kalen Bullock and then for getting him developed and coached up, and the secondary coaches and the defensive coaches for turning Kalen Bullock into a guy who is probably, if the Texans are able to win a playoff game or two playoff games, Kalen Bullock is going to make a play in one of those games, if not both, to turn the tide. He's been making big plays all season long. So kudos to Kalen Bullock. That pick right before the half, which he almost had another pick just before that. He said after the game it was a similar coverage or a similar play that the Dolphins were running. So Kalen Bullock is winner number four. Winner number three, I'm going to give it to Frank Ross, because the second biggest play of the game, or at least maybe tied with the Bullock interception for me, was the fake punt. Again, kind of cleaning up the offense's mess. You know, the fake punt came after they couldn't convert a third and short. And I think it was a third and short. I'd have to look at my notes. But yeah, let's see here. I got my notes. It was a third and two. Oh yeah, that was the Mechie drop on third and two. John Mechie dropped what looked like could have been a touchdown on third and two on the opening drive of the second half. And the Texans stall out, and just a ballsy call. I mean, obviously DeMeco rubber stamps all these calls, but it's Frank Ross who's the architect of this stuff on special teams. And I thought overall, the special teams played a big role in the win today. Tank Dell getting in there as a punt returner, I think, is a great decision for this football team to do. Tank Dell is going to make a big play on special teams for this team over these next couple of games. You watch. He's so hard to catch, and especially when it's a bunch of guys that are running full speed into a mosh pit. I love the move of Tank Dell to punt returner. Obviously love the fake punt from Dare, as I just mentioned. Tommy Townsend had a few good punts today. Kymie Fairbairn had a clean sheet today, kicking field goals and extra points. So this was a really, really good all-around game for special teams. The coverage units were great. So Frank Ross, winner number three. Winner number two, Christian Harris, back on the field for the Houston Texans, and it is great to see. He was active. He played more snaps than I figured he would play. I don't know the exact snap count. I just know that I saw 48 out there, a whole lot more than I thought we would see 48 out there. Great to have Christian Harris back, especially coinciding with the suspension of Azeez Al-Shaair. So I thought the linebacking crew as a whole, Henry Toa, very active out there. Jake Hansen was making some plays out there. But getting Christian Harris back on the field, that is a huge boost for this team. I had forgotten he was on the team as of like 3 or 4 weeks ago. This is almost like, honestly, this was a really good defense before Christian Harris was out there. This is almost like getting a free agent in week 15 of the season. So that was great to see. Winner number one. Now, look, Nico Collins probably belongs on the list of winners, but it's just tough when a guy has four catches for 17 yards. Two of them were for touchdowns, though. So I'm gonna give Nico just a honorable mention winner. But number one is Derek Stingley Jr. He was our guest on the postgame show today. He was great. He's not usually real talkative, but we asked him to take us through the two interceptions that he had. And I think the thing that jumped out to me, and we don't get to see this side of Stingley very often because when he does media availabilities, his answers are 8 to 10 seconds long and they're very brief. But you could see, and if you heard the interview, you know, and we'll maybe replay some of it on Payne and Pendergast this week. When I asked him to take us through the two interceptions, listening to him kind of talk the strategy of it, the leverage, the situational aspect of Detroit had a fat guy touchdown today. Sorry, I'm distracted by NFL Red Zone that's on in the studio here. A tackle had a touchdown today for the Lions. I can't see who it is, but holy crap, that guy's fat. But I was really impressed with Stingley's football intellect is what I'm trying to say. Really, really smart dude. And I texted Nick Caserio after the interview and mentioned that to him. And he's like, yeah, man, like Stingley is a high IQ football player. And I think that's a big reason why they liked him so much at number three is the guy's a football junkie. The guy's super smart. And we'll replay the audio hopefully at some point here in the next day or two. But if you listen to him take you through the interceptions, man, you can tell this is a thinking man's football player. And on top of that, he is just a dynamic playmaker with incredible hands, incredible ball skills, flair for the moment, strong, big, tough. Had a couple TFLs today as well for the Texans. So really, really good to see Derek Stingley Jr., who is going to be, I would guess, the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. I'm guessing he is at a minimum a Pro Bowler, and the way he's making plays lately in big spots for the Texans, it wouldn't shock me to see him be a first-team All-Pro, first or second-team All-Pro at a minimum. So those are my four winners for this game, with an honorable mention to Nico Collins, who went and got two touchdowns on just four catches for 17 yards and probably did it with a smile on his face because that's who he is. All right, four losers for the game today. And when I say losers, I don't mean that they're losers as people or that they're horrible players, just not a good day at the office. And Joe Mixon, while he led the team in receiving, five catches for 33 yards, 12 carries for 23 yards. This is not all on Joe Mixon. This offensive line continues to struggle to run block. And I know it was a different permutation of blockers up there today. There were some things that this group did better than previous groups they put together. If Joe Mixon isn't getting 100 yards, he's getting like 30 yards on 18 carries. Today it was 12 carries for 23 yards. And here was the big thing for me with the running game today is that when Joe Mixon went down at one point with an injury that looked to be kind of serious, it was on yet another hip drop tackle on Joe that Joe Mixon sustained or that he was on the wrong end of. I was like, okay, this is rough territory here, because they clearly don't trust Damian Pierce. They don't trust anybody except Joe Mixon to carry the football right now. The only other people that carried the football today were C.J. Stroud and Tank Dell. So and Daria Gumbawale on a fake punt. So they had 20 carries for 77 yards. But if you take out end-arounds with Tank Dell and you take out a fake punt by Daria Gumbawale, on just straight runs by either the quarterback or Joe Mixon. Now, granted, three of CJ's runs were kneel downs at the end of game. Mixon's the only one that matters here in what I'm trying to talk about. 12 carries for 23 yards is totally unacceptable. And Mixon is sort of the face of it for me in trying to make this point. But the fact of the matter is, this is an O-line problem. This is a Bobby Slowick problem. So why don't I talk about that for a second? Loser number three, Bobby Slowick. There's nothing that I saw offensively today other than the opportunism of actually cashing in points after the defense made plays or special teams made plays. Other than that, there is nothing that I saw that I feel like Bobby Slowick went into the bye week and figured anything out. I can see why his answers all the time now are, we just got to execute better, because there's not really there's not really anything going on that's making me confident that that Bobby's going to be able to scheme the Texans out of this thing here. Kudos to getting Tank involved with the end around there, but that was mostly Tank making two guys miss. And I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that even on the two plays, first of all, they didn't have any long drives. The one long drive they had on paper was the one that went 70 yards for the second Nico touchdown. Half of those yards were the fake punt. That's not a drive where you give the offensive coordinator credit. They were punting during that drive. They were lined up to punt during that drive. By definition, if you're lined up to punt during a drive, you as the OC do not get credit for that one. And the two touchdowns they had weren't anything. They weren't plays that were executed as they were drawn up. They were CJ improvising, buying time, and then him having ESP with Nico Collins to find a soft spot in the defense and get a touchdown. So there's very few yards out there that were schemed up by Bobby Slowick. So, you take out that fake punt, they had about 140 yards of total offense. There's no world where that's acceptable, where I can feel good about what's going on with the offense. Again, that they cashed in some of these opportunistic field position situations with points is excellent. That's really good. But that they got 140 some odd yards of offense with their quarterback on the field is totally problematic. And I don't think it's anything that's getting solved this season. I think it's just who they are. They're going to hang their head on defense. Probably there'll be more trick plays on special teams, maybe some big plays on special teams now with Tank back there returning punts. And then you just got to hope that situationally they can execute enough to get you 20 to 23 points and the defense can shut the other team down. This is who they are. All right, loser number two, Jonathan Taylor, for the reason I just mentioned. And I'm happy to put him on this list because he dropped an easy touchdown at the goal line. Like, he was waltzing into the end zone on a long run and decided to just drop the ball right before the goal line and it rolls out of the end zone. Here's why, and I know that the Colts went on to lose by 18 points, so some of you who didn't watch that game or didn't watch Red Zone while that game was on are probably like, it's 7 points in a game they lost by 18. Why are you giving this guy shit? Why are you making him a loser here? Because that touchdown would have put them up 20-7. That touchdown would have put them up 20-7. And I believe it was in the first half, if I'm not mistaken, because I think it was 13-10 at the half. Let me look this up just so that I have it right here. No, it was 13-7 at the half. So I think that took place in the third quarter, early in the third quarter, because it was 13-7 at the half. That would have made it 20-7. And if you think about a team quarterbacked by Anthony Richardson, up 20-7, that game, the crowd will be out of the game. The Colts don't have to rely on Anthony Richardson running the football or throwing the football, I should say. They can rely on his legs to go win the game for them or go seal the game for them. You can lean on Jonathan Taylor. Them making it a two-score game would have made it really hard. And by the way, would have put much more onus on Bo Nix, who had three interceptions at that point in the game. So that snafu, that gaffe by Jonathan Taylor totally changed everything in that game, where instead of being up 13 points, you get totally deflated because you're only up six. It's a turnover on top of that. It's not like you drop the ball at the goal line and then the Colts still get a few cracks at it. Like, the ball rolled out of the end zone and it was a touchback and Denver gets the ball back. And I think they went down and scored a field goal to start to put a little more game pressure. The Colts didn't score the rest of the game. That's all you need to know. And they lose 31-13. They get outscored 24-0 after that play. So, Jonathan Taylor, you deserve to be on this list. I'm glad you're on this list because I'm a Houston Texan fan, as are most of the people listening to this podcast. Loser number one for me, Tua Tagovailoa. On the day, 29 of 40, 198 yards. And if you want to know how hollow completion percentage is, because everybody was talking about Tua's completion percentage before this game. Ooh, he hasn't completed less than 70% of his passes in any of the games since he's come back from his concussion or whatever. All you need to do is have watched this game to know how insignificant completion percentage is as a measurement for Tua Tagovailoa. They put up a stat during the game that he leads the NFL in number of passes that are caught behind the line of scrimmage. In other words, screens, little missile screens to the outside, dinks and dunks, things like that. 25% of his passes are completed behind the line of scrimmage. That's incredible. So you can take his 70-plus completion percentage and you can just you can shove it up a donkey's ass for all I care. He averaged 4.9 yards per attempt in this game. Tua was awful in this game. He was the 11 misses were like the 11 incompletions, three of them were interceptions, but he missed some open guys too in this game. So I don't care about the 29 of 40. Let him complete 70% of his passes or 74%, whatever this percentage is. He got strip sacked in this game. He got sacked two other times in this game at very crucial times, especially the Danielle Hunter sack on the second to last drive that made it second and 25. And then he threw the three picks, which were, you know, they were all of the, you know, they were all of the this is on Tua variety, I think. I think the first Stingley one was a little easy for Stingley, so you never know if that was a miscommunication. But just heaving it up for grabs with Stingley there and Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill's not a guy you throw it up in a crowd to and expect him to come down with it. So Tua Tagovailoa, he will never be a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He'll always make a ton of money for the Dolphins because they've seen how the other half lives with Skylar Thompson and Tim Boyle. And as long as Mike McDaniel is there, they'll always put up sexy numbers against shitty teams and they won't be able to beat good teams. End of subject. Have fun, Dolphin fan, with that being your existence. Tua Tagovailoa, when it matters, sucks. There. All right. So there you go. Four winners, four losers. I will be back for a mailbag episode a little later on this week. HOUmailbag@gmail.com is how you can get me in the email. Send in your emails. You've got a division champ, Houston Texan fans, AFC South champs for the second year in a row. Congratulations to D'Amico Ryans, Nick Caserio, and all the players in the front office and ownership of the team. It's been fun watching this thing get turned around. Obviously, there's still things to fix and flaws with this team, but they're our squad, and we shall roll with them and see how far we can take this thing. The next game up will be Saturday in Kansas City. We'll see if that's a Patrick Mahomes joint or not. That'll be something to follow this week, and you can follow it all right here along with me on the Utopia Football Podcast. So, for Anthony Irwin, my producer, all of you for listening, I am heading home to watch a little Sunday Night Football and get ready for Payne and Pendergast on Monday. So, until I talk to you next time, have a great week, everybody.